Well, what's that noise? Is that in the...
Check.
Okay, Tom, we're going to start, so I'm going to...
Good evening. Welcome to the New School at Parsons. My name is Karen Crowley. I'm the director of the Verley Centre for Archaeologists at the New School and the curator of this exhibition. And absolutely thrilled and honoured and grateful that Alexis Babbitt is delivering this lecture on democracy as word and brand tonight. He was supported in, I don't know about conceiving the lecture, but at least in staging it here by a number of people. I'd like to acknowledge their help. Foremost, Radio Free 103.9, Diana Kennedy and Tim Tomper, we just met. Thank you. And then at the Verley Center, Julie Snavely and Alyssa Peters were most helpful in getting this off the ground. I think many of you know Alexis, but I just quickly want to say a few introductory comments to you, who is a performance artist, sound artist, writer, curator, the editor of a couple of books, or three in fact.
Only two.
Perspectives on
Alexis. That's a magazine.
Oh, the editor of it, nevertheless.
One of the editors, yeah.
Okay. And the books are called Sound Generation, and that's forthcoming from Autonomy Media. And then the Atlas of Radical Cartography is a book that accompanies a traveling exhibition, both of which were co-curated and co-edited by you and Lizzie Bobo. You have also given lots of wonderful talks. I haven't been privy to many of them, but just looking at these lectures or the titles of them, you get a sense of the range of subjects that Alexis covers. For instance, everybody says the same bullshit in all lands and through all ages, which was a study in Akkord and Babel. Then there was the lecture regarding sound as art. There is the possibility of life without the sun. Those were both in 203. There was a lecture on the influence of Dada amongst colonized peoples, and many others. There are exhibitions. I mentioned the Atlas of Cartography, but there is another one called a Conference on Coordinologists, which took place last spring. There is an exhibition called Audience that's coming up in this year, towards the end of it, in India. Then there is the Voice of Authority and the Soundscape of Unfettered Being that was presented in 205, and Aspects of Jupiter, which was a festival presented in 204. I really appreciate your being here and taking on this assignment, in a sense, or invitation to work with the term democracy as a brand, which so much suggests something fixed and rigid. And what we're getting tonight, I think, is anything but. So I don't know, Alex, if you want to speak about the structure of the evening a bit?
Yeah, I'll speak a bit, but I want to make sure if everybody has their radios, maybe I'll just talk right in the microphone, so we'll make sure. Can everyone hear in the radios all right?
What is it, 89.3?
89.3 is the station, yeah. Because basically, me at the podium... Hey, Tom, can I switch to that stiffer one? Because I think I can't do a handheld. So yeah, I'm going to be the voice in your head, but I'm not the voice in everyone's head. How do I tighten this? Okay, can everyone hear now? If you can hear, click your thumbs or your... Yeah, okay, so that's everyone except for three people. No? Still no? Okay, so if someone can help, anybody who can't hear, raise your hand and someone can help you. So Karen, oh my God, I'm so flattered by your introduction, and I hope that this lecture lives up to that wonderful introduction. And actually, it's wonderful that you mentioned the voice of authority and the soundscape of unfettered being. I guess that's when I started thinking about voices of authority, which is what we have here, and that it will be all pronouncements of the powerful. And the speech you'll hear in what I'm calling the fora, the four forums, is mostly from some conversations that I had with a group of Eugene Lang students earlier this semester. You're just getting a lot of static. Ah, wonderful chalkboards.
Say something?
Hello? Anyway, so everybody can hear who needs to hear, right? Lauren, where's your radio? We need to get you a radio. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to start this, and I'm just going to warn everyone who's in the room that there will be a few points that might be a little loud. So,
fundamentación.
And it's just going to be music for like the next 2 minutes, so if you want to change your seat or see the show, you still have a chance. I don't do anything until Reagan shows up.
Democracy, the National Endowment for Democracy, 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 democracy. Democracy.
must follow no other course. We must
for much of the last
course.
Century of America's faith in freedom.
For much of the last century of America's
was
faith
a rock in a raging sea.
Was a rock
now
in a raging sea.
Now it is a seed upon the wind.
Now it is a seed upon the wind.
Taking root in many nations. Now it is a seed upon the wind.
Democracy is a word. Like any word, it gains its meaning through its use. And this is loud. George Bush is very loud. He's a very loud man, isn't he? Oh, because he's on that channel. There we go. Like any word, it gains its meaning through its use. Since 2002, I've been examining the strange uses that this word has been put to, and I've come to believe that it's been manipulated beyond all utility. I look forward to discussing this with you all afterwards this evening, as an equal member of the forum. Can everybody hear me okay over all this noise? Good. I like these presidents really loud, but if they're too loud, you can throw paper at me and tell me that they're too loud. Democracy is an English word. It's a borrowing from an ancient word, and it's not a term with millennia of continuous history, as common sense might contend. And now Chavez is very loud, isn't he? There we go. It's a borrowing from an ancient word, and it's not a term with millennia of continuous history, as some would contend. The Oxford English Dictionary's first citation from 1531 treats it as a foreign term, saying that this manner of governance was called in the Greek democratia, in Latin popularis potentia, and in English the rule of the commonality.
So technically, the people, the civilians, should be in charge, and
where everything is decided by popular vote. But if you're like running a country this big, there's no such thing as true democracy because you could have a people where the majority believes in slavery.
Its first citation as an English word comes from 1574. At that point, the word was interchangeable with democracy, and it denoted something close to its Athenian usage, that of a state or a government where power is invested in the people, in distinction to one where power is invested in kings, in the property owners, in the priests, or in the rich. Now, the fact that elementary school kids have to learn about the American government as being rooted in the Athenian democracy, and the way that that colors later readings that high school students must do of the Republic, could be part of why, in our common sense, we think of democracy as having two centuries of tradition going back to Athens. It's in the Republic that Plato brings the word democracy into a common philosophical language. He refers to democracy as one of the dialectical stages of a corrupt government. The descent begins from democracy, which is the government by honor. Since it's difficult to distinguish wealth from honor, as the poor are often expected to honor the wealthy, oligarchy, or government by the wealthy, emerges. The rich use the state to consolidate their wealth until the poor overthrow them and establish democracy, or rule by the people. In the free society of democracy, I might be ahead of where I want to be in the soundtrack, I think. Hold on 1 second. No, everything's fine. So, everybody's clear on the whole descent. Did you guys all read The Republic? Everybody's familiar? I love that I'm talking so softly and you can all hear me. This is really pretty wonderful. I can't wait to give you all the mic later so you can do it too. Anyway, so rich men would hire strong men. Ooh, Abe Lincoln. Abe Lincoln was also very loud. He's a tall man with long vocal cords. Rich men would hire strong men to serve their purposes, while the common people rally around a popular leader or a demagogue to defend their liberty. According to Plato, a demagogue, as soon as he has the opportunity, establishes tyranny. Now, back to the Oxford English Dictionary. The primary definition, that of government of the people, by the people, for the people, as Abraham Lincoln just very loudly told us, That is where officers of the government would be common people, and the common good is the goal of government, has its first usage in 1576, and the adjective democratic is first attributed to 1602 in the distinguishing of aristocratic government from democratic government. So, the next definition of democracy that we find in the Oxford English Dictionary comes to us from 1828, and it seems very harmless when you read it, but it was to have far-reaching consequences in terms of the use, misuse, and abuse of the word democracy. And that is, democracy as Jacksonian democracy, or as the OED puts it, the principles of the Democratic Party of the United States of America, with its first attribution in 1828.
Democracy.
This was the moment when the Democratic Party dropped the word Republican.
Democracy.
I knew Bush was going to get loud here.
Jackson and his supporters decided to reinvent American
democracy.
Democracy. So they organized all kinds of popular.
This was the moment when the Democratic Party dropped the word Republican from their name, leaving it to be picked up by Tories and whatnot. Jacksonian democracy was born of the achievement in the United States in 1824 of universal male suffrage. Thus, democracy here picked up a connotation of one man, one vote.
It could take place in the boondocks. It can happen in rural Tennessee,
and what the,
rural New York.
If you can hear, can everyone hear the soundtrack?
And this kind of stirring up popular vote and giving the people the notion that they should choose the president and not the caucus members.
The left side's really soft, isn't it?
But
I'm trying to.
Politics.
This isn't the students talking on the left channel right now.
It's
these are from two documentaries about Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson.
And I'm just trying to sort of set up a little.
He was the first who asserted that president.
Discussion between the fact that Jackson was a genocidal Indian killer.
He
was responsible for the Trail of Tears and for. Certain expansionist policies that were
in leadership,
more brutal towards Native Americans than anyone than his predecessors in setting the stage for the Indian Wars that would go on into the 1880s.
And if people don't like
but at the same time, he's the hero of the common people.
Jackson is
kind of
opposition
here.
Jackson is reported to have said, Justice Marshall has delivered.
It sounds much clearer in my headphones, so I hope that the listening audience,
Jackson believes as president,
listening to the web stream, can tell all that.
You whip the people into a frenzy over something which may or may not be true, and then you ride their energy into office and then commit mayhem as you will.
So, moving from 1828, lexical histories of the word democracy are very hard to come by. More often what one finds is a furious search for democracy in the past, as if it should be surprising that humans have always been social and collective beings, as if it should be surprising that the love of freedom persisted even when the great chain of being was common sense. One useful lexicography that exists is the history of the word democracy in France by Philip Costopoulos and Pierre Rosanvallon, which points out that the word democracy did not gain currency in French political discourse until the founding of the Second Republic in the great year of 1848. Thus, the American usage was spreading. This song here is the short-lived theme of the Second Republic, the chant of the Girondins. This is not.
Oh.
And democracy was fixed with those meanings of rule of the people and beginning to be a euphemism for republican government. Why people chose to call republicanism democracy is something we could figure out later. I haven't figured out any reason why. But these were the meanings until we get Woodrow Wilson. That's the next great advance of democracy in England. The collage right now is a little bit about Wilson's activities in the era right after World War I.
And at the end of the war, he was asked to accompany the president to the Paris Peace Conference.
Well, as far as implementing democracy, it doesn't really make sense. How are we supposed to make a nation be democratic? That's not the way they've governed themselves. When there are several connotations when we hear it as Americans, we might think lofty goals of equality and
making the world safe for democracy was the slogan of the Paris Peace Conference. Whether Wilson's stated aims in making the world safe for democracy were authentic or were also euphemisms for gunboat diplomacy is an important question, but it's not one directly relevant to a lexical consideration of democracy as a word. Wilson transformed the word democracy into a message, thus making possible an evangelical democracy. Moreover, with his 14 points, Wilson added connotations of anti-imperialism and self-determination for colonized people, thus spreading a fervor to speak the word democracy to millions and millions of people around the world.
One dictatorship for another.
And so it's at this time, at the same time that this democracy is leaping off the lips throughout the world and making its way into constitutions in Africa and Asia, a new connotation is devised in the United States, this time in direct opposition to the Democratic Party and to its revered leader, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
To govern a nation with democracy as freedom of choice and not a dictatorship, but like just substituting one dictatorship for another in some ways.
So where's the opposition? This connotation of democracy, as opposed to socialism in any form, as integral with laissez-faire capitalism, began taking shape before the Second World War. There was not yet the dominant usage for the term when the war ended. But following the defeat of fascism and the downfall of European imperialism, no self-respecting young nation would dream of calling itself anything but a democracy. And this is the one point where I wish that this lecture had visuals as well, because there's a map that I would love to show you all right now, which is of the countries in the world self-identified as democracies. I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it's a huge map of the world where everything is blue, which are all the countries that are democratic, except for Saudi Arabia and a little dot in like Brunei, and those are the only non-democracies in the world if one goes by one's self-claimed identities. So, while democracy in the Wilsonian sense might have been on the minds of nationalists drafting their new constitutions, the connotation of democracy as capitalism's corollary was firmly embedded in the term by the 1940s, a corrupt term denoting relations far more insidious than the open exploitation of what Lenin termed bourgeois democracy.
Most products are still like necessities. Most products are still goods like shoes, necessities, stockings, even goods like shoes, stockings, even for their durability. For their durability. For their durability.
Ate what they had to, and the people shopped for what they needed. And while the very rich may have bought things they didn't need, most people did not. And Mazur envisioned a break with that, where you would have things that you didn't actually need, but you wanted. as opposed to needed.
He told a group of advertisers, "You have taken over the relations job, creating desire. You have taken over the job, creating desire, to constantly moving." And
the marriage really is the guy within the United States more than anybody else who sort of brings to the table.
So right now this is a little bit about Edward Bernays, the founder of public relations, who worked closely with Woodrow Wilson.
From the
at the Paris Peace Conference. This is all taken from kind of lifted these sounds from a Curtis documentary, sort of The Power of Nightmares, right? No, it's the other one. Thank you.
Ready for Sigmund Freud. I mean, they are Century ready of the Self,
which I highly recommend everyone.
Become the central after his election, he told a group of advertisers, after his elections, he told a group of advertisers, "You have taken public relations, creating desire. You have taken over the job, creating desire. Constantly moving and have transformed people into constantly moving machines that have become the key
to this usage of democracy as the corollary of capitalism that we must understand as the seed upon the wind, taking root in many nations since the fall of the Soviet Union. The yearning for freedom is a yearning for privatizing commons, commodifying life, and universalizing production with standardized business models. The next part of the soundtrack is probably going to be a bit messy because it followed with about 6 minutes of snippets from George Bush's State of the Union addresses from 2002, 2003, and 2005. As I was looking at the use of the word over the past 8 years, that's where I really, it's since 2002 that I've been having these conversations with people about democracy as a damaged word, a hollow word, mostly because of the feeling I have in my body, like listening to a Bush speech. But this morning, you know, after yesterday, the sight of that helicopter leaving, I had to cut out all of that Bush talk, and I mean, I couldn't even listen to it, so I assume you all would feel the same. But, so anyway, it's this deep corruption, it's the deep corruption of this term democracy over the past 8 years, from the uses it was put to in the war on terror. This is part of what President Obama inherits from his predecessor. He knows that he has a fiscal crisis and an infinite war, but given his adulation for the founders, I wonder how he will confront the fundamental disconnection between contemporary language and that of the 18th century language.
A una sociedad de incluidos y de iguales, donde no haya exclusión, donde no haya miseria.
So from the voice of authority right now is Carmona, and on the left is Chavez. If you don't speak Spanish,
democracia,
it doesn't matter. It's pretty clear.
Lo dije hace un rato, delante de nuestro pueblo.
So wrap up the lexicography right now and move into the discussion. We've identified a series of connotations for world democracy drawn from the citations in the OED and confirmed through dialogue with students at Eugene Lang. And since I'm the voice in your head and not the voice of authority, I'll conclude with some nagging questions rather than any authoritative determinations. Democracy is a word. Like any word, it has many meanings and many connotations. Even if one use becomes dominant, it would require generations to completely efface the prior uses and meanings. If those meanings are contradictory, effacement is less likely than an unfolding of the contradictions within the word, where it sometimes denotes this and sometimes that other meaning. Sometimes a word even unfolds within it complete opposites. And I wonder if democracy has become one of these auto antonyms, one of these strange words which are the opposites of themselves. Auto antonyms come from many sources. Sometimes two, often French words, distinguished by accents, become one word when they enter English. Like, for example, cleave. Other times, as with connotations that are at odds, that is, that which is written may be the arbiter or may be irrelevant, so literally, therefore, means actually, or literally means virtually, means not really at all. That makes sense. It makes sense on paper, but even reading it doesn't make any sense.
Literally.
As evidence of auto-antonymy, I put up these two voices here. These are two men, Pedro Carmona, who was the interim president of Venezuela, you may remember, for a few hours in April of 2002, and Hugo Chavez, who was the president of Venezuela for all but those 48 hours since 1999. Both men are dictators, according to the current usage of the term, and both men would also self-describe as Democrat.
outside the country.
Other auto antonyms are ought, moot, oversight, sanguine, table, temper, trim, and wind up. But I don't think democracy is an auto antonym. I think it can't be. For the mark of an auto antonym is that in its use, it's clearly one thing or another. If I say that I'm going to trim the tree, you would have no doubt as to whether I was going to prune the tree or to decorate it.
My project for my body
so
was pretty much
what kind of word is democracy?
Has the quote-unquote bad stuff on it.
And, given the context
this
of this exhibition,
all the good stuff, the positive stuff on it.
I wonder if
so
can you guys hear what's going on in the soundtrack right now?
Hearts and daggers.
It's hard,
and,
huh?
And like a deity, an evil deity.
It's
and
really
snakes.
Hard with headphones to guess what
and
things will sound like in a room like this.
Hearts and flowers and birds.
Well, on the little speakers in the foyer, there's a young woman who's about to get branded with hot iron, burning an image into her thigh. And on the voice
of
authority, you have a researcher from Google talking
about
planning design elements for different branding websites.
I guess there are a lot of like
so
negative stereotypes.
So I wonder if you can consider democracy as a brand.
In general. I guess for me, I don't really see them that much. Like,
I don't really
just
know
see
much
the art,
about branding.
Like
and
the beauty
and
what you can create.
I hope that I began listening to lots of market research, documentaries, meetings like this Google meeting that's on the right. To try to figure out what branding is, and all I can learn is that it's a very young word that seems to cover a large range of activities. So hopefully some people in the audience here are a bit more expert in marketing or some sense of what branding really is. But when I think about
the skill of the artist,
I found this one list of the qualities of a good brand name, and it seems like they apply to democracy pretty well.
All these things help to determine
a good brand name should be protected,
be
easy to pronounce, easy to remember, easy to recognize, easy to translate into all languages in the markets where the brand will be used, which is definitely true for democracy. I mean, it's always democracy, democracia, democracy. It's the same word no matter what. It should attract attention. It should suggest product benefits.
I wish I could just fast
like
forward so
freedom.
I just get the whole ordeal over with.
Suggest that the company or the product image, like democracy,
the,
sort of makes it seem like the country
right
which has it is,
okay,
is good,
okay,
right?
Ready.
Distinguish the product's positioning relative to the competition, like Islamic fundamentalism or I don't know what the competition for democracy may be. It should be attractive and it should stand out among another group of brands. So considering that democracy kind of fits these descriptors of what a good brand name should have.
I don't see it as harmony.
I wonder if we
my
could
skin,
all talk about
more decoration
if
to
maybe
it.
Democracy is a
I'm
brand.
Like
so with that, I'm going to put the headphones on and join you all with having a voice in your head. And
it is
I'll
weird because you
give
hear
that
it.
Microphone to anyone
that's
who
hurt.
Might
just
have any thoughts.
Adding your personal touch to it.
How does
it's not
this
really
sound?
Damaging it. Some parts I'm trying not to wince.
Sorry about that.
Hey, guess what, Joyce? We're done.
Yay!
How was that?
Good, good.
And I think the message is, I own my body,
yes,
I want to
check.
Do something creative with it, and I don't mind that you find
the
it
microphone?
Offensive.
You know, anyone can get a tattoo. Everybody's getting tattoos now. Everybody's getting pierced, but you don't see too many brandings.
Most people, not that they want to feel the pain, but I have to say they don't want to hide anything either. They want the real full experience.
When I go through some pain, I don't know. I like it. I like it.
I just make feedback.
It makes you feel alive.
So the pain becomes an important moment where a person tries to generate a new kind of
feedback?
Experience
so
in
yeah,
the body,
really, that's
to feel
my,
the body
my,
in a different way.
Research
so even
on
though it's painful, it
branding is a word I really just read the OED
concerns.
And started reflecting on it and seeing how it fit in with the conversations I had with the students. And does anyone think democracy is a brand? And if it's a brand, what's it a brand for?
I'll say something. I mean, it's interesting how it's being used now as if it were a brand to kind of sell people this idea of freedom and justice when in fact every democracy is really a corporatocracy, that it's more about corporations ruling the world. And democracy is just kind of a ruse to get people to buy into it. Whether or not it's a brand, I don't know. I'm trying to get my head around that. It's used like a brand, maybe, like, you know, Starbucks. I don't know.
Doesn't Pepsi have the logo for democracy now?
I thought they have the logo of Korean Air.
I think it has become a brand when America uses it.
with the notion of freedom so that they can sell it to other countries. But the powers that be, I don't think, use it themselves in a democratic way, for they are in control. They want you to believe, or they make you believe, or somehow, should I use the word hypnotize? They hypnotize you into believe that you are free by using the word democracy with the notion of freedom.
See, Lucinda, the reason I was kind of hoping to discuss democracy as a brand is hearing both of you, this fits into different usages, these abusages, really, I think is a better word, that democracy has been put to. So, for example, when you were talking about corporatocracy, democracy as corporatocracy, that's this usage that we've had since the 20s, you know, when Bernays came up and in the post-Wilson use, where democracy becomes this corollary to capitalism, becomes something even more insidious than like Lenin's idea of bourgeois democracy. And what you were describing is very close to Lenin's definition of bourgeois democracy, which is just that it's democracy for the rich, democracy for those with the means to be part of it, and it's peddled upon everyone to provide an illusion of freedom and participatory involvement with the government, when in fact there's a very small minority that possesses these democratic relations with each other and control the whole society. But it, and maybe all the old usages of democracy are sufficient for it, but I don't know, it seems like since the past 8 years, democracy has become some completely new kind of word, meaningless word that we don't even yet have a term for these kind of words that it is, and that's where I became attracted to, as soon as I heard the title of this show, to thinking about how democracy could be a brand. Maybe a brand is the word for that kind of word that has a thingness to it, this solidity and thingness, and yet within it's hollow, you know? Any thoughts?
There is also the notion of direct democracy and representational democracy. Mm-hmm. And what we live in right now is representational democracy, in the sense that we vote for an individual who represents us. And when that individual make a decision, we go along with it because we have given that person the right to act up on our behalf. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where we go wrong, because that individual had already something in mind. So he simply needed the acknowledgement or the authority from us in order to act.
Anyone? Naeem.
Not responding to that, just general. Okay. I just took some notes during your talk. Just some personal experiences. One is that, speaking of the brand and, the American involvement in promoting or not promoting this brand, there are a lot of examples actually. I think it's fine, no? Or so I need that whole thing. There are a lot of examples actually where the US interest is tied to actually non-promotion of democracy. Just as promotion of democracy. And the most recent example I'll give, Bangladesh, just came out of a 2-year, I would say, flirtation with a soft military coup. So we had a military government for 2 years under the guise that the democratic government couldn't control the country. And now we had elections in December and the return of democracy. But during these 2 years, the American embassy in Bangladesh was very active, in a way actually that would be unthinkable in many other countries, very active in intervening and meeting with all the political leaders and the army. And this underlying fear, as articulated by the US Embassy, particularly James Moriarty, who's the new ambassador, and before him we had Patricia Butenis, who for her service in Bangladesh has been promoted and is now the number 2 in the Iraq mission. So it's no longer a backwards posting, actually getting posted to Bangladesh, actually within the Foreign Service is a promotion track now. All of these people, Moriarty, Butenis, etc., articulated repeatedly that one of their big concerns about democratic governments in Bangladesh was that they were too weak to control the Islamists, right? That's the American point of view, and that's why the military was considered a solution. And then after 2 years of this sort of aborted experiment, we came back to democracy, and the American power axis within Bangladesh basically went into temporary retreat, although no one who's a student of power politics will think it's permanent. So that's one thing I want to talk about, that the U.S. promotion of democracy takes various shapes. And it's very interesting to look at these kinds of countries that are sort of in the periphery for global power politics in terms of individual citizens, but actually for the American foreign policy establishment, actually quite important. So a lot of things that happen, let's say in Bangladesh, which is what I'm most familiar with, is completely outside the usual headline. You know, you'll give examples of Venezuela, which is sort of very well documented within American left rhetoric as to what's going on there. But there are lots of other movements going on that aren't easily followed. Second thing I wanted to say is during your talk, you used this sentence. You said, well, democracy may be a competition for other systems in competition, such as Islamic fundamentalism, or let's use quotes, Islamist political movements of various flavors. The interesting thing is that there are a lot of countries where actually Islamist political movements are very much in favor of democracy. And in fact, it's lack of democracy that's preventing them from getting to power. Concrete example is Egypt. And also Saudi Arabia, which is a bubbling underground Islamist movement whose language, if you look at it very closely, is actually very assertive language, saying the things that the state won't say, okay? Opposing U.S. foreign policy, positions on Israel, etc., that are actually very attractive to the masses. And the concrete example of Islamic parties not being allowed to win is Turkey, where the army has intervened repeatedly when democratic results actually brought Islamists to power, and the army intervened to say, no, we can't have this, and Algeria also. So I would just say that within democratic systems, Islamic political parties are actually a serious force, and more democracy doesn't mean that Islamist political parties will not win. Actually, they might very well win, especially in countries where there's a collapse of the left.
Does anyone want to say anything, or should I respond to Naeem? Okay. So actually, when I referred to democracy as in competition with Islamic fundamentalism, that was reading the qualities of a good brand name. A good brand name needs to be recognizable in distinction to other brand names. And so I was supposing that perhaps Islamic fundamentalism could be another brand that's comparable. But to go back to your first example about the way the U.S. operates in Bangladesh or other countries, and to make a comparison to something much closer to home and think again about democracy as a brand. Brands are often owned by the same corporation or the same parent element that's hidden, right, that then create different branded entities beneath that are then recognizable. For example, here in New York, Power 105.1 and Hot 97, which are both the leading hip-hop stations, they're both owned by the same company. Yet the two companies, the two brands, are in competition and have different followings and position everything as if they're in a struggle for each other, when in fact the same controlling interest has created both of them. So if there's democracy or Islamic fundamentalism, perhaps these are multiple brands created by the same controlling interest or by different controlling interests that are just taking various faces. And that's where I'm trying to think about how a brand is a new kind of hollow word. Like if we were to think of democracy as a brand, there's a hollowness to it. Yet when you were speaking about, for example, in Egypt, if there's more democracy in Egypt or less, you're positing an essence to democracy, and so I'm wondering if you want to, do you really think there's something essentially democratic, or do you just mean, because if there's more democracy, does that mean more parliament, or does that mean more commons? You know, what does it really mean? It doesn't really mean anything if we say more democracy, yet it's used... it's used in modern language, and I think it's at this point, after the abuses of the 20th century, meaningless to talk about more democracy or less democracy in some place. There's only the identification of democracy.
Well, I meant direct elections, for example. I mean, to put it in very simple terms.
Yeah, don't you want to be the voice in everyone's head?
Okay. I meant a very simple thing, which is the ability to elect your leaders within, let's say, a parliamentary system, which doesn't exist properly in Egypt. And one of the reasons it doesn't exist is that the single biggest opposition to Hosni Mubarak now is the Muslim Brotherhood and all the other Islamic parties. And that's something that scares both the Egyptian intelligentsia and power axes in that area. So if you had more direct voting ability, right, more uncontrolled elections, elections that are not controlled by the existing government in power, then you wouldn't be able to predict the result. I mean, that's actually why in Bangladesh we had this huge crisis, because for 15 years now we had the system where There's an elected government for 5 years, and this is actually unique anywhere. And after 5 years, the elected government steps down, and something called a caretaker government takes over for 2 months to administer the elections. Because the belief is that no party in power will ever supervise elections and allow themselves to be defeated. So for 15 years, we've had this. And this last time, the army stepped in because even that system broke down. And the specter that's always used is, okay, we have to make sure the Islamists don't win. Right, and that's actually something that people like me also sort of semi-subscribe to. We also don't want the Islamists to win, so we're sort of co-opted into this skewing of democracy, defined in my terms as, you know, people being able to directly vote without interference for whoever they wish, which unfortunately can lead to, you know, results that you may not like. You meaning, let's say, the left in certain countries.
Anyone else, or should we take a break and catch up on recent Bangladeshi political history and the post-election? Yes, Doug.
Your talk has brought up a lot of thoughts about democracy, and I think democracy, to a certain extent, is a slogan, or it's a code word, very much the way Nike is a code word. It's the tip of the iceberg. When we think of a word, a brand, the images that come to us, whether it's positive or negative, we explore within our imagination, within our desire. And democracy certainly has the sense of desire. If we think of the code word or name of communism or imperialism, these code words are just the tips. And then we have to really deconstruct what these words are, which is what we're doing today. And when I think of democracy, I think of capitalism, I think of imperialism. I also think of an aspect of freedom. But it's a hench kind of freedom, because even that word has been co-opted, and we really don't have complete freedom the way those who would like us to think about democracy would want us to have that sense of freedom. So immediately when I think of democracy, I think of the erosion of democracy, and perhaps at one point it had more impetus, but now it's a hollow word.
It was also interesting what you said about the term and the solidity of it. And I think that's what connects it to the notion of a brand, that it's this vessel suggesting something very solid, that we know exactly what to expect and we know exactly what we're going to get out of it, but we actually, and we buy into this. And of course that it's very much counter the idea of democracy, which is continuously evolving and changing and something that's completely and by definition intangible and non-solid and fluid, which is the reason that the exhibition in itself also, you know, brings that up in terms of its installation, where we are fixed on this platform to talk and to participate in a project that is defined at the outset as an exhibition and something static in a sense.
Just to add to that, and what I was saying, is there somewhere in the brain that we need to have some kind of signpost, the way if we were in the 1500s or 1600s and walking through a cottage or a space, and we needed some signposts to tell us where to go. So we are visually recognizing, have we been here before? Do we know that we're in safe territory? And I think a type of branding is the same thing when we walk into a city now. So we've come up to 21st century, and now we're walking in a city and we see Starbucks. You know, do we recognize that that's safe? Do we recognize that McDonald's is safe or IKEA is that safe? In the same way, do we recognize that democracy is safe? Or do we recognize that communism is safe? And there's somewhere in the brain that may tell us that we had this need for concretizing, making concrete, I should say, the idea of a word so that we feel either safe or perhaps not. And I'm just thinking, when we were, you know, going way back, that we had to have some facility to tell us when we're walking in a certain area that this is a familiar area or terrain and it's not. And I think abstractly the same thing happens when we think about democracy as a code or a brand, whether we feel safe about that being in this country as opposed to being in another country and not feeling safe because we don't recognize that brand or word or institution.
I like this idea of code words, but when you were describing about feeling safe, and I don't know, on the one hand I was imagining road signs, things that are simple that direct someone that don't seem applicable, but then there's something else like thinking about Christendom, you know, or like a whole world, you know, and democracy becomes like a world that can, you know, contain so much. The sort of invisible rules of a world.
Well, I think that's the success of branding. You know, I'm looking at the words IKEA. You know, that one word is the tip. It's a code word, and we know what we're going to get more than likely.
What do you get?
Well, when I think of IKEA, I think of Europe. I think of very sharp, very stylish, very inexpensive. And that could also be applied to, you know, regimes as well, in a sense. But that's the type of branding. You know, I think democracy has that same thing. I think this is what Bush very much wanted to do, was to brand democracy and export it. Like, it's something that is no different than, say, Sony exporting electronics to us, but instead of Sony, it's democracy. So that's what I think when I think of a word that just, you know, we salivate because we understand it. You know, Nike, IKEA, democracy. They're definitely code words, and they're definitely a form of branding that immediately there's a satiating experience or the antithesis of it. You know, we may just want to back away from it. So we're completely blinded if we open ourselves to not questioning what IKEA is or democracy in that sense.
What is a code word in your usage of a code word?
When I think of code word, for instance, you know, if I think of democracy, I think of, what do I think of? I think about the sense of, do I really have freedom? There's the assumption of freedom, but within that term, where can I go? Am I really limited? Well, within a certain space. If I walk around with a vest on that's got bombs on it, you know, there goes my freedom in a sense. You know, but that's the sense. So it's not, I can't reduce it just to one word. I think that's the brilliance of democracy, is the brilliance of, you know, Nike or IKEA. The brilliance is it sticks there, and it's kind of like flypaper, and then other aspects of it turn around, and it gets sticky in that sense, and we can't let it go. I will always think of democracy and associate it with the USA, no matter how much I try to extricate my brain from going there. You know, there is that sense of democracy as a way, in the same way like Nike. I can never extricate myself from the images, from the dialogue that's been going on for years and years and years. So we get inculcated with that. And the only way to really dematerialize that word and desensitize the word, I think, is to really look deeply into it.
Any other thoughts? Or Naeem, I see you're taking new notes. Anything? Yes.
I am not so sure that I understand what I'm going to say, but I believe that just as we look at ourselves as living organism, there are certain abstract ideas that are alive and they grow, they develop or evolve, and somehow we fight with them in the developing process, and we think we understand them and we want to codify them and say this is what it is and this is where the fight comes from. And I think democracy is one of those abstract words or abstract notions that keeps evolving from the Greek era and into our present day. If we look into the time when the founding fathers discovered this place and said it is going to be a democratic state as opposed to what they left behind, they had one thing in mind, but that has been changed from day to day until now. And I'm not so sure, as we just witnessed yesterday, we said, okay, this is it. This is America, what it can be. And I think there is more to come as far as democracy is concerned. You know, we just have to go through the process as we become conscious of it, as we evolve just like technology is evolving, consciousness is evolving, and I think democracy will continue to evolve. And as it relates to a brand, the brand can change. So we'll just have to see.
Should we leave it at that? Does everybody think democracy is revitalized and a vital, still ever-changing term? After yesterday? Okay, well, I guess that's it then. Thank you for coming. Sorry we didn't reach wonderful conclusions that will change our whole idea of society and the English language, but, you know, it does not happen every day.
You don't know that it did.
And thank you, everyone listening on the podcast. And thanks to Free 103.9.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.